Welcome to the Poem of the Week. As you know, poems are patient-oriented evidence that matters. Each week, our poem is intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes, and he is joined by InfoPoem's senior editor, Dr. Mark Abell. Gentlemen.
Good day, Mark.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing this month?
Terrific.
Listen, before we start, I think you've got an announcement you want to make.
Yeah, we're doing our first annual InfoPoem CME course on November 8th through 11th in Las Vegas. This course is going to be fast-paced and interactive and a lot of fun, and it's going to feature the top poems of the past couple of years. We have a terrific group of faculty, fellow poet Henry Berry from Michigan State University, Rick Bucata from UCLA, Greg Vandekieft, Nate Link from NYU, and then, of course, both of us will be there teaching as well. The course is 20 hours of CME credit. It's totally pharma-free, and your afternoons are free to enjoy Vegas. You know, we are trying to do this in a way that really makes the most of your time. We're going to be starting off Thursday evening with a few hours of work, and then Friday, Saturday, and Sunday mornings. To learn more, you can go to www.infopoemscourse.com, and sure hope you can join us there.
The poem this week, we're going to begin with a classic story where a glass is filled to the 50% mark. Does that mean it's half full or half empty? I guess it depends to some extent on whether you're an optimist or a pessimist. We in clinical medicine are always talking with patients about numbers and risk. For example, a mortality rate of 14% also can mean a survival rate of 85%. Lots of data suggesting that how we talk to patients impacts how they make decisions. Many people, doctors included, are not comfortable with numbers. For example, the public values much more going from a risk of 1 in a million to 0 than of going from, say, 50 per million down to 10 per million. This week, Mark's going to help us look at how we can best present data to patients. Specifically, the study that he's looking at answers the question, do patients make decisions differently depending on how benefits of treatment are presented? Mark, what did the authors find?
Well, this is the kind of thing that I don't think many of us were taught in medical school, but there's been an increasing amount of research on this whole area of how do we really best and most successfully communicate with our patients about risks and benefits. And it's tough, and it's really one of the most important things that we do, though, particularly for important questions like whether or not to have a surgery or whether or not to start a medication for a lifetime. So to determine how the patients are going to respond to different types of risk, these researchers developed two hypothetical scenarios. And the first one looked at the effectiveness of drug therapy in patients at risk for a heart attack, and they gave this survey to people who were either at high or low cardiovascular risk. The second scenario looked at data on hip fracture prevention, and they gave these scenarios to 1,000 people picked from the community. And participants got the information three different ways. The first was using number needed to treat. So, for example, saying 13 patients have to take a drug for 5 years to prevent one heart attack. Now, the second was the average postponement of a bad outcome, either death or hip fracture, MI or hip fracture in these two scenarios. And so an example of the second would be patients who take the drug for 5 years will live an average of 2 months longer. And the third was to say there's more postponement of this bad stuff for some people, but none for others. So a way of putting that would be 1 in 4 patients who take the drug for 5 years will live about 8 months longer. The others have no benefit. So all of these scenarios use the same underlying data. They just presented the information in different ways. And what they found was quite interesting, and I guess you could have perhaps anticipated this. The number needed to treat was actually associated with the greatest likelihood that people would agree to treatment. The other two ways of presenting information made it less likely that they were going to agree to treatment. And the one that was the best at keeping people from agreeing to treatment was the small average postponement. So saying the average person will get an extra 2 months of life for taking this drug, that didn't seem too compelling to people. And the rate of agreeing to treatment was quite different. It ranged from 93% down to 69% for the heart disease example, and 74% to 34% for the osteoporosis example.
What strikes me is that the number needed to treat that they were using, though, is quite low. I wonder what happens as we move into, you know, into the cholesterol camp or the aspirin camp or something, where the number needed to treat, you know, are significantly greater.
And similarly, you know, for a lot of these, a lot of conditions, that average postponement may be a matter of days or weeks, not months or years. So, you know, the average patient may benefit only a week. I don't think that's really a terribly realistic way to present the information. Obviously, not everyone is going to have a heart attack delayed 1 week. It's maybe 1 in 10 people will have it delayed several months. So, you know, I think that there's an issue with that kind of presentation that I think almost is unfair and makes the treatment look worse than it probably is. It really begs the question of what's the right answer. You know, we maybe 93% should be taking that drug, maybe only 69% should. Right. I think the lesson is that how we present information can shape our patients' decisions, and we have to be aware of that. You know, if you're unscrupulous, maybe you would choose the way of presenting information to get the patient to do what we think is right. And I think we may do that informally anyway, whether that's ethically correct or not. I think if we believe a patient won't benefit from a therapy, we may put it in terms that subtly or not so subtly influence them against it.
And I think number needed to treat, one of the things that I find so useful about it is that it is something that's very easy to understand. For most clinical trials, you can calculate it, and it's easy to explain to patients. I don't think that they need to have an advanced degree in mathematics to understand the number needed to treat. And conversely, one of the other things that listeners have heard us talk about is the number needed to harm. And that's how many people do you need to treat for a fixed period of time to create a harm, a GI bleed, a stroke, whatever you're talking about. Anyways, patients, I think, can put their hands around those numbers.
You know, none of these things are perfect, but a lot of research has shown that using absolute numbers, like 13 patients like you have to be treated for one to benefit, is much better than using percentages and probabilities. So whenever possible, try to use absolute numbers, 10 out of 100, not 10%.
It's very effective at reminding patients that we never have data on how they're going to behave or what the outcome's going to be for them, that they're all we can do is say that they're part of this population, and that when we look at people similar to you, that this is the expected outcome. And I think that perhaps long-term patient satisfaction will increase too, so that if it doesn't happen to them or they don't have the positive outcome, you know, they're not shocked. Excellent. Well, thanks, Mark. I look forward to talking with you next week.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Take care.
Okay, talk to you.
And we'll remind you just one more time. To sign up for the InfoPoems course, go to www.infopoemscourse.com. We look forward to seeing you.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.